This episode of Datanauts is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Enhance your technology aptitude. IT Pro TV is the resource to keep your IT skills up to date with engaging and informative video tutorials. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itprotv/datanauts and use the code datanauts30.
Remember those small, furry, soft, gentle, attractive, and slow-moving creatures called tribbles? Yeah, if you're a Trekkie, I'm sure you do. Well, these little fellas live in data centers, but not just any data center, your data center. And what do? They reproduce like crazy, becoming larger and larger. They crawl around stealthily until you're forced to pay attention and do something. Does this sound familiar? Yeah, it's the life of many enterprise engineers who are working in environments that have little or just no monitoring to capture metrics. Each issue is treated as a manual priority that requires camping out on a P0 call to sip on tribal knowledge Kool-Aid. But wouldn't it be great if we could use an open source telemetry framework to make collecting, processing, and publishing data center metrics modular, dynamic, and open? The answer is, of course, yes! And welcome to the show. I am Chris Wall. You can follow me at Chris Wall on the Twitters. And with me is my co-host, who always seems to roll a one with his diamond-encrusted electric blue D100 dice, Ethan Banks. He's at EC Banks on the Twitters. And this is the Datanauts podcast. You can find this and all of our shows on iTunes, in your favorite podcatcher, or at packofpushers.net. My first question is to you, Ethan. How are you feeling today, sir? Snazzy as usual, I hope.
You know, when I was reading the intro that you wrote, I'm like, D100 dice, they make those? And I started looking. And it's like, yeah, sure enough, they call it the golf ball. It's like, wow, that is really awesome. And so now I need to get one, although I don't know if I can find a diamond encrusted electric blue one, but that would be fabulous.
We're going to get nerdy and crazy about something different, and that's telemetry and Intel's open source framework called Snap. And to do that, we brought an expert along because neither of us are experts yet. And hopefully we will all become experts at the end of this show in 45 minutes or less, almost better than Domino's Pizza. We have Matt Brender from Intel. Welcome to the show. Who are you and what do you do, sir?
Why, hello, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Matthew Brender. I'm a developer advocate for Intel in the software-defined infrastructure team. And we're responsible for open source projects from an R&D angle around schedulers, automation, and orchestration engines.
That's got to be one of the coolest introductions ever. Software-defined infrastructure sounds cool. Developer advocate sounds super hipster and new. How do you land a gig like that?
I sum it up, and I've done this on, others may recognize my voice from another podcast called The Geek Whispers, where we talk about the career angles of IT. And on there, I've dug into this a few times, that I think a developer advocate is just a great way of summarizing a geek that's allowed to speak. It's not just the ability to speak, but being allowed to organizationally. And it's somebody that can be behind the wall of engineering, that engineering can be a black box to the people that don't do engineering, like marketing and sales and others. I really love being part of an R&D team. But at the same time, I'm pretty obsessed with the storyline. Like, how are we telling a technical story? And when you think about how compelling the peer-to-peer communication is in the data center these days, you have to understand that to really be meaningful. So I'm behind the ranks as a geek who's allowed to speak. I speak reasonably fluent marketing. I understand the sales cycle, but I've been writing a lot of code and doing some podcasts.
Got it. You're like a Gandalf who codes, sort of, and presents at events. That's neat, man. I'm adding new roles to my lexicon. Like, remember before when it was really simple, you had sysadmin and engineer and architect and perhaps marketing. And now there's all these little cross hybrid roles that allow people to do neat stuff like what you're doing, Matt.
Yeah. It's a sign of where we are in the industry. There's a lot of negative space and nature abhors a vacuum. So we're filling it with new and exciting terms. The TLDR of it is like, yeah, I like to talk about technology. I like to get deep in it, but then roll it up into more meaningful conversations.
Well, let's start off that conversation, Matt. We are talking about Intel Snap. Maybe the way to talk about Intel Snap is to take a step back. Start the discussion by explaining what data center telemetry is. From the networking side, telemetry's come up as a hot item. Oh, well, from this particular network device, we can stream this data outbound from the switch and send it up to some data collector that's going to do something with the data. From a data center perspective, you know, broader than just network, how would you define data center telemetry?
I find it important to differentiate telemetry by also starting with saying with what it isn't. And what it isn't is the all-encompassing idea of analytics. Analytics is this goal of not just collecting information and aggregating it, but also finding information out about it, like adding value on top of it, having decisions about it. The telemetry itself is just the ability to capture disparate metrics and data and flags that are throughout all layers of the data center, aggregate them, and publish them somewhere. And that could be to a persistent storage place that can go downstream into something much more complex where you're going to do some machine learning down there. Really, what happens after you collect that information and publish it to some place is beyond the scope of telemetry. So as we talk about Snap, it's very much just the collecting, a little bit of processing, and publishing of that information, which connects perfectly into a broader conversation of analytics, like what you would do with an APM and application performance monitoring tool set.
Is it different from what we've had before with tools like SNMP and WMI, where you can go and pull and grab a bunch of data and do something with it? And by yet, I mean, is telemetry distinct?
No, I think it's a superset. So telemetry would include SNMP traps and the work we've done with SNMP since I started with fiber channel storage arrays and NAS systems attached to them. And there was SNMP in those configurations to gather logs across the different parts of it. It's very much that. And what we're doing with Snap, though, the unique part is wrapping that into the first kind of unifying API for it so that it can be consumed in a predictable way. But yeah, we're going down the right path by calling all that stuff that we're used to. It's an age-old problem when we're talking about telemetry. I mean, since we've written code and since we played with hardware, you've always wanted to gather information about it to know if it's working correctly. It's not a new problem, and that's why we're not trying to solve it in some new fancy way. We're trying to wrap it up in a predictable way so that it can be consumed more predictably.
Yeah, and I see on the Intel Snap GitHub page, I copied a little snippet out that I thought was important, and you state quite clearly, the goal is not to compete with existing metric slash monitoring slash telemetry agents. And it's something I want to clear up here because I'm thinking, all right, I was in the headspace where I was kind of blending analytics and telemetry together. In my mental image is kind of separating those two and abstracting it apart. I'm making that journey. But I'm also thinking, don't we already have a lot of other solutions out there that collect and even analyze the data after it's been collected?
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely a ton, and that's part of the struggle. So let me get into some of the particulars. For instance, at Intel alone, we had going on dozens of different frameworks and binaries and libraries by which you would consume information from different hardware. So every time we produce a new set of, whether it has to do with disk, whether it's CPU-based or memory, each of these have hardware triggers and little flags that you can pull from and get very meaningful information out of the hardware that we've produced. Each of those teams have worked reasonably independently to consume that information and be able to publish it to places so that we can make something like Node Manager, which allows you to collect the actual power consumption of each of the pieces of your hardware. But we found that working with the team behind a project like Node Manager, they can start using Snap as a way of collecting power information alongside other information on their new versions of that same stuff without having to rewrite the tool set that was gathering it. So there's a lot of one-stop tools that were used once for one portion of the overall problem set. And this is the first sort of superset of it, being able to gather disparate information and view it in a single schema and then be able to process it predictably downstream.
Snap sounds like it's the middleman between the data and the consumer of that data, making sure that however we gather the data, it gets normalized and then made accessible in a predictable way.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we call it a framework. Snap is a framework to gathering information. And architecturally, we'll dig into that a little later, but you'll notice a lot of plugins. And plugins are the wrapper functions by which you collect certain information. Much of infrastructure is run on some flavor of Linux. And Linux has many well-known flags that you can consume. So we have wrappers around procfs, we have wrappers around common tool sets like psutil, and wrappers around other telemetry frameworks like collectd that are very common. And each of those wrappers actually use that same software, those same libraries, but then consume them and put them into a namespace that is then more easily parsed, more easily queried, and also put into a normalized series of information that could be visualized more effectively.
And when you talk about Intel Snap, you mentioned various challenges that you had internally across dozens of different frameworks and ways to collect data. Was that the idea behind creating something like Snap, was solving an internal problem and then saying, hey, this is pretty cool, let's open source it because we're awesome and we like sharing what we're doing? Or is this kind of a smaller piece of a larger project?
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. We came across this need internally, but before we did a public beta, we did an internal beta to see if teams would see value in it. That's the advantage of having tens of thousands of coworkers that do incredible things and run infrastructures that are rather massive by any scale.
Sure, sure.
Our intention from day one was actually to empower people to build more clouds, be able to build private cloud infrastructure. And part of the trouble with people running private cloud today is that they're competing with companies that have utilization that is far beyond what they're able to achieve on their own. So when doing a very deep analysis on that space, we see a lot of tool sets that are very effective at part of the problem. Schedulers, for instance, are doing a decent job. But the tough part about scheduling is you can't schedule things if you don't have enough context in which to increase utilization.
Wait a minute, put some context around that. So scheduling like Kubernetes trying to stand up containers in an infrastructure, but needing more information about what it's dealing with?
Yeah, Kubernetes is a perfect example of you're able to fit things into their decision engine and be able to look at resources, physical nodes that are running in the infrastructure and say, okay, can this support more services or is it at its or near its capacity? And to be able to do that more predictably, you need more information than it's easy to gather right now. So this is very much a tool set designed to power our customers and community users so that they're able to start to gather the right information. And that will lead to higher utilization as we continue to improve upon the project.
That makes a lot of sense, Matt. And I'm thinking as I'm hearing you talk about Snap, it seems like the API aspect is important. When you want to use Snap, I saw it has snapctl for the command line, and then I'm more interested in the RESTful API aspect. Is this new as a framework versus what other people are doing? And is it a way to kind of abstract away all those proprietary protocols that we have to use that kind of lock you into a particular way of doing things? Is that kind of the importance of having a RESTful API with Snap?
The universal statement of having RESTful APIs, public APIs for people to gather, like that's another one of those things that we've been preaching for many years. We as an Intel, we as an anyone in open source. But what's interesting from this telemetry angle is that each of the tools that are similar to Snap or are collecting telemetry for Snap, they may have a RESTful API, but they don't encapsulate the way in which you consume information and then produce it downstream in the same way we do. So when you look through the API documentation of Snap, you see that loading plugins is a separate action from the running of the collection of information through what we call a task manifest that says the schedule at which information is being collected and where it's being collected from. And this decoupling of the way in which you collect information and the frequency of which you collect it, and having each of these pieces version controlled and idempotent, they're maintaining state as opposed to something that like you're updating in place. This allows for us to have a very simple non-blocking mechanism. It all boils down to being able to run Snap at scale. It's designed to be operationally efficient at scale. That'll help our customers be able to run Snap on one system as easily as they're able to run it on 1,000 systems.
Telemetry is one of those terms that has been getting all kinds of press all of a sudden. I mean, I focus a lot on networking stuff, Chris, and telemetry's come up a lot. And I've done some research and some writing around that. And here it is again, you know, in the larger data center context. I think what Matt did for me is help me just kind of grasp what telemetry really is in a broader industry perspective. And it's not hard, right? Telemetry, it's a superset of data sources that we're already familiar with. For example, SNMP, which networking people have been using for a long time to gather data from network devices. Snap comes in and says, okay, we're going to take telemetry from whatever data source you've got. We're going to normalize the data, make it accessible in a common and a predictable way. You talk to Snap, Snap gathers the data from everything, whatever you need, and makes it so that you can access it in a predictable way. I get it, and it seems like it's needful, and I really like it.
For sure. I think that's where I was struggling a little bit, trying to separate the idea of gathering data with analyzing the data. But in this case, my takeaway was that there's a lot of value in having that API endpoint that's abstracted away all the collection method and publishing methods and just all the work, right? We talked around using various collections and trying to get to that data, and that can be a challenge. So in this case, they've made it that using data across a heterogeneous set of resources is a much simpler consumption model. And really, quite frankly, having more data can lead to making better decisions.
Our DataNaut sponsor today is IT Pro TV. With IT Pro TV, you gain access to the most important tools needed to prepare you for IT certification. They have a big library, over 1,000 hours of up-to-date, high-quality video content. They add new courses every week. Courses are streamed live and also on demand, and you can get them wherever you're at via just about whatever device you can imagine, including Chromecast, Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, of course, your PC or your Mac, or your mobile device. And so we say certification. So what kind of courses are we talking about here? Well, they include CompTIA, Advanced Security Practitioner, CCNP Security, Microsoft Server 2016 MCSE, Ethical Hacking, Virtualization, Cryptography, Metasploit, and more. I mean, I went through this library, and there's lots and lots of Cisco-related stuff, VMware, and more. Learning the course material is good, but you also want to be able to test, practice things, verify that you're ready for the exam, and IT Pro TV gives you that as well. You get 100 step-by-step virtual machine labs and also Transcender practice exams, which is $109 value. And there is one low monthly subscription price for all of this, and if you decide after trying it you don't like it, there is a no-hassle cancellation policy. By the way, if you're maybe a manager or you represent a group of people that might want to do IT Pro TV, you can do that. There is corporate group pricing, and companies that have done that include Harvard, MIT, UCSD, Stanford, and others. So check out itprotv/datanauts to upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month or $570 per year, but we have a special offer. You can try it free for 7 days when you sign up using our code DATANAUTS30 to check out their courses, live stream, and more, and you'll also receive 30% off the lifetime of your account. That is less than $40 per month or $399 for the entire year. Just visit itpro.tv/datanauts, use the code at datanauts30, and try it free for 7 days, plus save 30% off the life of your account. Matt, you were just sharing with us how customers can run Intel Snap at scale, which kind of begs the question, what is the overall architecture? What does Snap look like if I'm going to put this into my data center?
At a high level, it comes in two binaries, so two complete packages. You don't need to have an environment running. You don't even have to know what we coded in, though I'm happy to tell you about Go and why Go is actually pretty phenomenal for what we're doing. But there's the SnapD instance, which is the daemon. You'd run it like an agent on any other system. It's the thing that would be wrapped up into a Vib if we were going to deploy it on ESXi, or we package it in RPM if you want to put it on a Linux system. There's that, and then there's SnapCTL, which is totally optional. It's the command line wrapper for the CLI, if you wanted to do something from the command line as opposed to going over curl or however else you're going to communicate to the RESTful API.
So SnapD is doing what? It's gathering data from that local system?
SnapD is doing a few different things. It primarily just, is the collector, but it's also the command functionality, the control process, and it includes actually a configuration management module that allows it to run at scale as a single node that can communicate to thousands of nodes. So it's a lot of things packaged up into one, but if you were to think about it, like you'd install it on a system, you would need SnapD to be able to communicate with wherever you want to collect metrics from. And remember the plugin model we were talking about. So there's plugins as well that we'll want to bring into this. And they are the individual packages that you're actually using to pull information and collect it. So the SnapD instance will use plugins to collect information. And then the SnapD instance will also publish that to the endpoint using other plugins. That's the modularity of it.
So any system that I wish to pull telemetry from has got to be running SnapD with the appropriate plugins to gather the data that I'm interested in.
Yep. Well, there's two options. You can do it with SnapD running on the server itself, or you can go over an HTTP or HTTPS endpoint and request that remotely. Your mileage may vary on latency if you do it that way, but you have either option.
Sure, because I'm thinking SnapD is not going to run on a Windows system today, so it's got to be using something. Is that kind of the idea? Does it even support Windows, or is it just meant for Linux and API type stuff?
No, it's absolutely intended to work across whatever people run in their data center, and we're working on a package for Windows right now. Go cross-compiles on Windows pretty seamlessly, but there are a couple namespace issues that you got to wrap your head around. But long story short is we're working on that as well. Right now we have it running on most flavors of Linux without trouble. I tend to play on CoreOS lately. Ubuntu is another great example, and everything else that people run.
And again, that you mentioned SnapD. You also mentioned Snap Control, which is some kind of a CLI interface. Could you just talk about that again?
Yeah, SnapCTL is the Snap Control command line. It's using the exact same interface that you would use if you were using curl, because you're talking over the API directly. It's not a separate control path, but it's just a handy wrapper tool so that you can do your command line flags and be able to load plugins, unload plugins, or build the task manifests. So if we were to break it out into the pieces here, you have the SnapD daemon. You would load plugins into a SnapD instance. And then you would start a task. And a task is a YAML or JSON file that encapsulates the schedule at which you want to collect telemetry and what specific measurements you're going to gather. And based on what you're gathering, that would actually say what plugins are required. Those are the sections of it.
Interesting. Sounds very declarative.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's intended to be. It's actually breaks out into an extensible path. If you look at it, you can actually fork instances of this. You can be collecting one metric and you can branch it to multiple processors, and you can branch from those multiple processors into multiple publishers. And that's really the game changer here, that you could start by saying, I'm collecting node manager data from this node, and then you're going to publish it to a file to start. But then you spin up an InfluxDB server and you want to start posting it to there as well as the file. Great, you just put a new version of the task in place that also has that other publisher mentioned. As long as you've loaded that plugin, now you've got your publishing to both endpoints. And you can just keep extending this and adapting it without any restarts or any interruptions to that collection process.
So how does SnapD actually gather the data? I mean, you mentioned that there are plugins, but under the hood there, what's actually going on to pull in that data?
SnapD is just allocating the memory by which the plugin will be able to run as a child process, and it will use whatever library that it has available. So I think these are always more sensical by example. If we're talking about the publisher for InfluxDB, what you would actually do is you want to be able to publish to Influx. So we've wrapped the InfluxDB API into a client library using actually an InfluxDB client. You don't have to know how this works to use this. I just want to say that one more time, but we're going to keep digging in. So it uses the client, communicates, authenticates the API, and then is publishing to whatever database that you gave it as a name. On the collector side, let's use something like ETHTool. If you want to gather statistics or a registry dump over ETHTool, you need to have an authenticated user account on the Linux distro that you're running that's able to run the ETHTool command. And then all SnapD is doing with the plugin is actually wrapping the calling of that of ETHTool in a structured way and then putting it into a namespace that can be published to a database.
Got it. But all you have to do is populate this declarative file saying, I want these things to happen. And all of the SnapD does all the rest for you, does all the heavy lifting and the configuration and the authentication for you, is kind of the thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. That you really, as an admin, once the SnapD is installed and you load the plugin, you have to write a YAML or JSON file and run that. And then it will just run from that point forward and just keep publishing to wherever you want.
Yeah, that's a good point, because one of the questions I had was, as an operations focus person, how do I get started with this project? We've covered kind of the components and things, but is this something meant more for the dev eyeball to be working with? Do I need to know how to write in Go? You know, those are kind of the questions mulling around in my head to get started with Snap.
Yeah. And I totally understand. Actually, since I talked to you, Chris, I've realized that our documentation is definitely written in a way that makes more sense to developers. But I don't want that to scare away my operational brethren, because we actually package up Snap. So you can just download the SnapD. If you want to call it an agent, it's just the file itself under our releases tab in GitHub. you can download that on a Linux distro and then just run it from wherever it is. You can just like /snapd and it will run. If you do that and then load the plugins through snapctl or through curl, after downloading those, you can get up and running on OS X. It installs on OS X just fine. You could run it on any sort of Linux distro right now. And actually, I made a, I'm on my third, of just some videos for people to walk through that with them and show that it works without having to understand Go or the Go programming language.
So Snap is modular. We've established that. So if I have some brilliant idea for a plugin, something I need, how can I contribute?
Yeah. I'm going to ask, how comfortable are you with writing Go?
So this is where needing to write Go comes in. If I want to contribute, then I've got to have the coding chops.
Yes. With Snap in the state it is as a beta right now, if you want to add another plugin, you basically look at another plugin as an example file, and you have to implement three different methods. So I'm already going to lose a lot of people because I'm talking programming language terms. So you do have to code in order to add a new plugin. That said, if you are familiar with the basics of programming, it's pretty painless. I actually just did one yesterday, and it took about an hour to get it up and running. I'm going to have to do some unit tests and tweaking of it today to make it work. It's really quite straightforward, and I'm working heavily on making that so trivial that anyone can just a couple clicks and get it running. We're on that path. Right now, the file of how many plugins we already have is huge. It's in the range from collecting from OpenStack to a lot of Linux native tools to libvirt and psutil and other telemetry frameworks like Hekka, and we're working on something related to CollectD, which is very common. And then you can publish to everything from Graphite to every database you've heard of from Postgres to MySQL. So out of the box right now, you don't have to go write any of these plugins. But if you want to, I'm happy to help you figure that out.
Yeah, that sounds neat, because as a person that wanted to learn Python and PowerShell and things like that, sometimes I think the hardest part is finding a reason or like a channeling your energy into something. You know, it's cool to just noodle around and learn syntax, but this seems like it might be a good excuse if you wanted to learn Go. Maybe you can combine what you know about infrastructure and the metrics that should be there with potentially a new language. At least then you know half the equation. So I'm just thinking this might be a cool way to learn in an environment that you already half know, and the rest of it's the learning process. So maybe if you're a listener that's been wanting to go a little more in the code world, this might be a good place to start. Non-threatening, friendly community, that sort of jazz to learn something new.
Oh, Chris, you just nailed it as well. I mean, because really, in order to write a collector or a processor or a publisher, there's some domain knowledge that you have to already have. So if you're going to write something that's collecting from HAProxy is one that just came out recently, and you wanted to write something similar but for Nginx, another common proxy server, you would have to know what to look for. Like, what are you gathering from there? What's important? What isn't? And that expertise has nothing to do with Go. It has everything to do with your experience with that tool set. Same goes for publishers as you're pushing to a database. There's one in progress right now pushing to Cassandra, which is not a trivial database at all. So you have to have the expertise and familiarity to dig into that while writing the Go. The Go part's actually less painful there, especially coming from operations.
You know, one thing that was pretty cool for me was at the Intel Cloud Day event a couple weeks ago in San Francisco. There's a bunch of announcements, and the folks from Grafana were there. And even you too, Matt, you wrote a blog post about the fact that Grafana, which is a really awesome dashboard project that I've been using for a while now, is like the dashboard for Intel Snap. What does that mean? Why was Grafana chosen? What is sexy about it?
What I love about this story is it's one of those ones where we didn't even see the opportunity as well as the guys at Grafana did. A couple of the co-creators of Grafana, they roll up into a company now called RainTank. And they just started hacking around on a plugin. Grafana's an amazing dashboard for operations engineers and developers alike. And I think that's really the power of it. But what was so cool is they just started to write their own plugin for Grafana. Then they pinged us like, hey, this has a lot of potential. Let's talk some more. So it happened organically. They saw the API and they were impressed. And then the opportunity arose from there. And what was really cool, after they realized it was easy to publish information from Snap into Grafana, they took it a step further, and they actually, the guys at Grafana, they took Snap and they made what's called a data store in Grafana terms, which allows you to point to the Snap API and actually configure new tasks natively from Grafana. So they explain this as ad hoc querying. Let's say you're in a situation where you know something is starting to go south and there's some more information that you want to gather that you don't always do. Well, you just go into Grafana, you go over to the data store for Snap, and you actually choose what metrics you want to collect. And you can get down to the examples running at 200 milliseconds. And we're able to gather just the full slew of measurements we've been talking about from the beginning and the continued growth that we have in the plugin catalog. You can gather that all, and you can do that on an ad hoc basis through Grafana. And that's what just blows my mind, of just the opportunity of like a well-documented public API being taken and then just somebody running with it.
You know what? You can fear the change or you can embrace it. And I like kind of tickling the idea of learning something new. And I guess my takeaway here is that stepping into a new world of learning by standing on top of your old world of knowledge is a key opportunity. It's just really an attitude and a perspective. And I know I'm going to look at using Go because I keep hearing all this cool stuff about it. And apparently it's super easy, and a little like poke at Matt since he can't hear me right now. If he can learn it, anybody can, right? Poke, poke. There we go. So it's a good way to take something new, base it on what I know about infrastructure. And I almost feel like Snap is a cool vehicle to increase my skills. Ethan, what are you thinking?
Just a quick comment on Go, since I have spent a little bit of time reading up on it. It is more of a traditional programming language. It's compiled. There's a little more effort to it to actually write code and then turn it into something you can use, as opposed to Python, which is like you can execute it in the interpreter and off you go without having to do anything fancy. So Go is, I don't know how easy it's going to be to learn as far as that goes. If you've already, see what I did there? If you've got some background in programming, I'm sure you can pick it up. The big thing I got from Matt here was that Snap has a lot of momentum already. He mentioned that there's a lot of plugins already for it. And by the way, you don't have to learn Go or any other programming to use Snap. I mean, it's a tool that's there. You get into the programming part of it if you want to add to the project. But it's usable today as is by operators. Any of us can glom onto this thing and start utilizing what's been created so far. And not only that, it's extensible for the future because it's modular. That means anybody that wants to could write plugins and make it even more capable, even more functional for the data center as time goes on. I think that speaks well for its potential longevity.
Well said. Hi, this is Drew saying thanks to today's sponsor, InterOp. InterOp is the leading independent IT conference, and the Packet Pushers are putting together a two-day Future of Networking Summit for InterOp Las Vegas 2016. The goal of the summit is to identify current and emerging technologies that are going to affect the networking industry over the next 5 to 10 years. And we're bringing in special guests, experts, practitioners, and of course the Packet Pushers themselves. We'll talk about the changing state of network operations, advances in network hardware and silicon, open networking, SD-WAN, containers, and more. You can join us for live podcast recordings, and we'll have an after-hours hangout, too. And besides the Future of Networking Summit, InterOp's assembling a full slate of independent, top-notch content on security, virtualization, IT leadership, SDN, and more. So make your plans now to join us at InterOp Las Vegas, May 2nd through the 6th, at the beautiful Mandalay Bay Hotel. Use the code PPUSHERS when you register, and you can get 25% off 5-day, 3-day, and 2-day conference passes. We hope to see you there, and now back to the conversation.
Well, so far we've talked about what is telemetry and how the Snap framework operates, and we've gone deep into what is Snap and how the architecture is put together. You know, let's just kind of riff a little bit on the future of data center operations. And Matt, I think you're uniquely positioned to give some commentary on this. And I wanted to look at how are things moving forward with new projects, solutions, technologies, just talk about data center operations in general. And I think this is timely, looking at something like Snap coming out, where we're able to abstract away all these little different ways to gather data into a declarative configuration file and then present that somewhere. I mean, that seems like a really big game changer for just data center operations in general.
I agree. I think the way we're moving, there's a couple trends I really appreciate right now. One is that people are willing to go beyond their comfort zone in the proprietary land of software. I mean, even if you love the proprietary interface you've been using and you know it well, we're complementing that with very powerful open source tools. There's big gun companies like Intel that are getting behind that as well and contributing back with our expertise and our engineering time. And then when you see other companies pick that up and go forward with it, you just see that the open source craze around data center is only going to make us all as operations engineers a lot smarter and have a lot more choice in how we visualize our information. And then the other thing is, we've hit on it a couple times already, but the API architecture. I mean, we're just getting to a point where if you don't have a well-documented public API, no one's going to adopt your software. And I like that. I like that democratization of information and the ease at which we can all consume it. I think it's a necessity for us to get out of this very sad custom CLI-based world that I started in storage systems, and get to a place that is just a lot more fun to work on, to be totally honest.
But Matt, I got to ask you a cynical question here.
Please do.
How is Intel and whoever else making money on this brave new world of open source software and open APIs that are going to drive data center operations? Where's the money coming from?
I love this argument because it tends to be a misunderstanding or a misappropriation of the difference between creating a project and having a business model. This project of Snap is about supporting a business model. Our business model at Intel, we're very honest about it. We want you to buy more hardware. Like, it's not rocket science at the end of the day for us. And what's cool about that is there's a paradox we tend to refer to called Jevons paradox. And it's this paradoxical conclusion that the easier you make something to consume, you don't actually consume less of it, you consume much more. The very simple gamble we're making is that we think if we make cloud computing resources easier to consume, you're not going to consume less of it. You're going to have more on-premises cloud. And guess what? That's probably going to be more Intel hardware, especially if we can show you the value of all the telemetry we have in all of our systems.
My on-premises home lab cloud is definitely growing exponentially. I probably put another $300 in Intel's pocket every year. So,
I mean, that's a real game changer.
So take that model and then apply it to a data center at scale, and I think it starts to make sense. You know, my $300, yeah, multiply that by 1,000, and then multiply that by however many customers that are out there, because your product's very easy to consume. I feel like you just baited this enormous bear trap and Ethan just stumbled into it and he's thrashing around right now.
I'll play that role. I'll be that guy. No problem.
No, it's great. It's such a fair question, because you look at just the insane amount of unicorn conversations around startups in the data center world, and you can get very easily confused about the difference between an open source project and a business model. And whether somebody's going open core on something or doing a freemium with additional features and functionality and services. And everyone's like, well, how do you compare it to Red Hat? And I personally love this conversation, but that's not related at all to what we're doing at Intel. When it comes down to it, we know what we do well, and that is we make incredible hardware. And incredible hardware needs incredible software that allows you to see all of its functions and features. So it's a very easy argument, actually, at the end of the day, which is fun. It's part of the joy I've had of being a software guy that's joined this hardware company, is seeing that the two things are so intimately connected, we take it for granted every day.
Matt, let's say adoption of Snap is great. A whole bunch of people are using it. What can I do now that I couldn't do before?
Here's the image I see. I see that every time a new piece of hardware is released from Intel, you can immediately inform all forms of schedulers in your infrastructure with that telemetry that's available to you because you have Snap implemented throughout your environment. I see that as you find new databases, which are only growing in the number of databases we want and the number of pipelines we want to run simultaneously, as these requirements change for the team, you simply update a task file. And that task allows you to just start dynamically publishing the same information to a new endpoint or add new information to a new endpoint totally separately through a separate task. And this modularity of the operations around Snap will enable people to just do what they need to in a limited amount of CPU and memory, but be able to take advantage of all the new information you can collect from new systems as it goes forward.
Yeah, if I'm sitting there and I need to write a script to gather something, I don't have to go, let's see, fire up Python, get the right libraries loaded so I can talk to this weird data source I've never interacted with before. Just go talk to Snap. Get on there. The data's already been published. You know, grab a hold of it. It's already in a data format I can do something with, and off I go.
Yeah, and then let's think about this from a human point of view. Let's say you're the operations engineer and you have like three different developers complaining to you. You spin up new tasks inside Grafana. You separate out a few new dashboards, and then you share it. and you probably post some of this stuff through Slack to each other. Just the ability to communicate visualization at a finer granularity very easily to disparate team members as you consume all this disparate data, it just changes the way in which you troubleshoot everything and the speed at which you can resolve a potential hazard.
Well, let's shift focus just a little bit and talk around the operational effects with something like data center level telemetry with that kind of dynamic feel to it. One thing on the data knots that we like to do is talk about busting down silos and getting rid of that tribal silo-driven architecture for teams. What do you suppose something like having a data center level telemetry that is so flexible, what is that going to do to the skill sets needed by the ops teams and the silos that we're kind of pigeonholed within today?
What I like about this is that it gives you an option to change. It doesn't require you to, because sometimes, and this is just a personal opinion here, that giving somebody the option to see new layers of information and see that as relevant to you, that's empowering to anyone that wants to take a step deeper and go beyond the silo. That said, what's also healthy about this is that it doesn't force you to bash down the silos. Because as much as we like to talk about silos as a bad thing, sometimes good fences make good neighbors. And we all need a little bit of space to know what we own and what we don't own. But I like the democratization of the information itself, that you can be running your SNMP system the way you have since day one of the data center, but I can write a wrapper in Snap and publish that to my dashboard for my developers so that they know how much bandwidth they're taking up. Something along those lines of just being able to get it in new forms and new places and not have to just use the same exact format every time. I find that incredibly encouraging, but it doesn't make it a prerequisite to destroy the org chart. But I'm happy to debate that as well, because I think there's advantage and disadvantage to everyone.
Well, excellent. I think that's good that you allow the choice. If you can change and want to change, go for it. If you can't, at least you can still adopt something new and allow that change to percolate throughout the organization. Matt, I wanted to thank you for coming on the show. It's been very eye-opening. You've gone quite deep and quite wide, which is difficult. If people want to learn a little bit more about Snap or follow you on social media, where can they find that at?
The easiest way to find us is on the GitHub site of github.com/intel-sti-x/snap. And you can find me on GitHub, Twitter, and most other places at MJ Brender.
Excellent. That's it for today's edition of the Data Knots podcast. If you're a social creature, hey, go ahead and follow at Chris Wall on the Twitters, or my blog is wallnetwork.com, or my delightful friend Ethan, he's at EC Banks on the Twitters, and his blog is ethancbanks.com. For more of our Data Knots shows about infrastructure engineering, nosedive down the rabbit hole that is packetpushers.net. You'll find the Data Knots talking about containers, conferences, certifications, PowerShell, moving to the cloud, full stack engineering, storage architecture, and just so much more. Until then, my friends, may your server lights blink, your storage spindle spin, and your cables be cleanly managed.
Drew doesn't pierce until. All right, fair.
Womp, la, la, la. Womp, womp, womp.
Ooh, chills.
Ooh, chills.
Yeah.